You're listening to the Outclassed podcast, exploring excellence in teaching, tech, and leadership.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the Outclassed podcast. It's great to have Cameron Ross with us today. Cam is been someone who's been listening to the podcast for a while. I see him on social media every now and then, tweeting something or sharing one of the thoughts or takeaways, which as a content producer is something that I've always always appreciate when we hear back from the audience. But I didn't ask Cam on because he's been a listener. What I asked Cameron on to have a conversation today is one of the things that I really want to do with the podcast is just have a chat with teachers at the coalface, getting things done, learning lessons, applying their learning and so on. And one of the things I've noticed about Cameron is that he just shows up everywhere. So whenever I see a new initiative launch anywhere on Instagram or on Twitter or on LinkedIn, it seems like you're there, you're commenting, you're engaged. And so I think one of the things I appreciate about you is that you just seem to be one of these lifelong learners, which is, you know, you strapped your boots on and gone for it. And I think if I think all the way back to when I started professionally presenting and started using technology better, one of the things that I really wanted to always maintain was the fact that this was classroom teachers talking about how we apply our craft, essentially, not some IT guy who wants to talk about the functions of a tool, but how do we actually apply this to the classroom? So Cameron, great to have you on.
Thanks, Mike, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, it seems like you're having some interesting times right now. You're at home, the whole family's in isolation and so on, so we might hear some background noise every now and then, but the joys of working from home and got kids at home and wife at home as well. So it'd be great just to hear a little bit about where you work, what your role is, how long you've been there, and then we might just go from there.
Sure. Well, thanks for, again, inviting me on the podcast episode today, Mike. My name is Cameron Ross, and I am the Digital Learning ICT Coach at St. Peter's College, Cranbourne in Melbourne, Victoria. So it's southeast suburbs of Melbourne. I've been there, this is my fifth year, and previous to that I worked at a school for 6 years down on the Mornington Peninsula in Victoria. Look, as you mentioned, I am a lifelong learner, so it is my, I guess, my goal every day is to reach out to different people, have a look at what they're sharing, and then trying to put it into practice, not only for myself, but also to share with my colleagues so they can build up their skills in using technology. And I guess the use of technology isn't just, oh, here's a brand new shiny tool. It is actually, let's have a look at it and let's have some sort of connection to the curriculum so it actually has meaning, not only for the staff member, but for the student as well. You did mention that, yes, I am in starting day one of 7 days worth of isolation at home. So I've got four kids, primary school age, all trying to do their own thing at home. So, yeah, keeps me on my toes, but, you know, I'm looking forward to having a discussion with you today.
So, Cameron, tell me a little bit about, like, how you got into teaching. You said that you did you've got 3 degrees in, you're working in the sports management space, but, like, what was it like getting into teaching and how did that sort of set up your framework and your mindset, I guess?
Yeah, look, I've always had a passion for sports management, but for me, teaching and leading was the key. And I'll tell you a story. My first day of teaching, I still remember it to this day, and this is over 10 years ago now. There were five of us teaching the same subject, Year 7 IT, or digital technologies as it's now called. And coming from a business background and high school, I was always of the opinion that everyone shared and everyone collaborated. Well, this first day, that blew that right out of the water. Everyone was teaching different things and there was no sharing. So for me, the last thing that from that meeting was anytime I got the opportunity to share and collaborate, I would try my hardest. So if anyone could take inspiration from that, yeah, for me, reach out. I'm always willing to share and collaborate where I can. If I can't, I'll find out for you.
Yeah, that's awesome. I had a very similar experience when I went from teaching science to history and geography. And generally speaking, I think teachers are hoarders. They've got so much material, so much resources. But again, how do you get someone to share that resource with you. And it's almost like you've got to go reinvent the wheel, create your own worksheets. This was back in the day when we used to create these lovely looking worksheets and hand them out to the students and had to have, you know, not just be text on a page, but have some images. And I remember thinking, same as you back then, like, surely there's got to be an easier way of doing this than writing out overhead projectors. And I wish we could just have a bank of resources that we could pull from and learn from one another. And then I was so surprised when I went from science to that history and geography department, no one was asking about like, what's my experience and what's the fresh eyes on it or anything like that in terms of what could they learn from me from being new to the department. So yeah, I can definitely relate to that story in both directions, being new into it and wanting to learn, but then thinking, man, I'm seeing so much that you don't see because you're in the middle of it. But no one was asking questions. It was bizarre.
And I guess, again, for me, it's always asking questions. And hopefully from what you can see on socials is I do ask questions. And if I don't know something, I'll ask. And if I agree or don't agree, it's nothing personal. It's just me wanting to learn more and more.
Yeah, yeah. And so how do you manage that? Because sometimes teachers don't like to admit that we don't know what we're talking about. Right? We're meant to be the font of all knowledge at the front of the room, and we're meant to have all the answers, not all the questions. So how do you battle that mindset of I'm going to look like an egg if I ask that question, or what will people think of me?
I'm always upfront, and I have been from day one of teaching. If I don't know something, and I will let my students know, and I'll say, look, guys, I don't know the answer right now, but you know what? I'm going to go out and find it, and I'll come back, and we'll have a discussion next time. Or if my students know more than what I do, which at times it happens, I'm not going to shy away from it. I'm going to actually ask them to stand up or go to students who may be struggling with the topic and say, look, here's your expert. Let's have a discussion. Let's work together to upskill everyone. So for me, that's the key, is being able to acknowledge that, you know what, in life, we don't know everything. There are times that we'll fail. And I don't look that as a negative. And for me, failure is the first attempt in learning. And I'm always going to say, right, yep, I've made a mistake, or I don't know something, and then we're going to learn together from that.
Yeah, I think that's super important, because I see a lot of people not willing to ask those questions. And again, I don't know if it just comes back to that lurker mentality. There's actually a statistic when they talk about building community that 1% of people post. So they'll ask a question or they'll start a stimulus question. 9% will reply, and then 90% will lurk, never engage. So they're never asking questions, but they're never providing answers or asking for clarity. So it's the 1-9-90 rule in terms of online community building. And it's hard to find those 1%ers or the 9%ers who are out there having that conversation.
Sure.
Yeah, quite interesting. So I think that mindset of being willing just to put yourself out there, like, what's the worst that's going to happen? Like, honestly.
100%. And that's what I share with my students. You fail. Like, obviously, big failure, okay, there are some things we can go through, but you ask a question, what's the worst thing that can happen? And what I try and do in my classrooms is provide that safe environment where questions are encouraged. No one's going to pick on you or laugh at you or anything like that. We're all in a safe environment where questions are able to be asked. We're all learning. We're all sponges, and we can then share our own knowledge and our own experiences to then ensure that whoever's asked that question gets the right one. And I know from being a person who's in a conference listening to a presenter, if I ask a question, I'm sure others in that room will be wanting to ask the same question. So,
yeah, I think that's a great position to take, especially in someone in your position who, where you could be thinking, man, if I don't know all the answers, then what's the point of me having this job right now? So, yeah, but I think that humility makes a big difference in terms of the people that you lead and the type of answers you get, right? Yeah, awesome. So talk to me about your role as like an IT coach. Like what percentage of your time is spent in the classroom with your own students, or are you just 100% released into the school to work with teachers?
No, I am predominantly a classroom teacher. I'm teaching predominantly year 10, 11 and 12. So for those outside of Victoria. It's senior students, so around 15, 16 year olds and up. Then the rest of the time is released to do the coaching side of things. The idea is, rather than me just going to them and providing the solution, it is actually having the discussion with the staff member and saying, okay, what is it that you're wanting to get out of it? And then I'm supporting with that, my knowledge, I guess.
Yeah, right. So you're very much outcomes focused by the sounds of things. So what's a typical sort of a question that a teacher will come and ask? Is it very tech tool focused, or is it more like, I'm trying to get this outcome in terms of the curriculum, but I'm thinking, how do I do this in a different kind of a way?
Well, I like the idea of typical, because to me, in my role, there is no such thing as typical. Some days it's help, I can't get this projector to work. To how can I, for example, get Flipgrid into the classroom, and what is Flipgrid and why do I need it? Nice. So again, it's a day-by-day proposition, and that's, I guess that's why I love my role, is because it does change all the time. It isn't the same. So coming back to the idea around providing reason to use a tech tool, I guess that's what really I enjoy most of, especially that role, is giving the staff member something to go away with. And I know you'd mentioned that in a previous episode, where it gives the staff member something to actually physical to take into the room, try it out with their students, and then give me feedback on how it worked. And then I can, I guess, adapt what I do and how I teach it, so I can move on from there.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, obviously, like I've said, you're one of the, I see you popping up everywhere. You seem to have lots and lots of stimulus material, so to speak. You get lots of ideas come in. Do you have like a filter that you use? Do you have, like, how do you decide what you're going to have a go at and what you might just leave to the side?
Good question. Look, I don't know if I've got a filter per se, but I guess I put my teacher hat on first and say, what is it that I can use in my classroom first, and then try to relate it back to our school's curriculum and our school focus, and then go from there. And don't get me wrong, I tried a lot of things, and more often than not, I just go, look, it's probably in the too hard basket at this point in time, but it's always there, and that's why I like to share a lot of things, because if I can't use it, someone else might. And that's why I love learning from a range of different people around the world, whether it's yourselves, UTB in New Zealand, or many colleagues in Australia, reach out to people in Europe, US. And that's the beauty of teaching, but also with Twitter as well. I think I started back probably 10 years ago, just get on there and just, I guess, lurked around for a little bit, just have a look. And then as you started getting more comfortable with the environment and then reaching out, connecting with people, probably about 6 or 7 years ago, I think, we connected somewhere along the line, maybe Teach Tech Play, I think it was. Yeah. But again, that was a eye-opener for me, because I was still relatively new in the teaching game, and being able to provide or have someone give me the confidence to ask questions and then be able to present on those topics just opened my eyes to the world that is digital technology. And that's how, I guess that's how I got my current job, is having that confidence behind me to try something new and then go from there.
Yeah. And then in terms of that, like, one of the things I wrestle with quite a lot is, you know, obviously I see a lot of new trends coming, new tools coming. And I'm like, man, how do you incorporate that into a busy teaching practice where you've already got, I don't know, what's your school using? Are you a Google school, Microsoft school? I can't remember, or a bit of everything.
We're a bit of both. We're half-half in terms of Google and Microsoft, but predominantly we use Google Workspace.
Yep.
So a lot of our collaboration is done with docs and sheets and slides and forms. But I guess part of my role is to work with that and then share my content knowledge to staff, and then I guess in turn when I'm teaching with my students. So for example, I'm teaching year 11 and 12 what we call data analytics, which is an IT-based subject. And with that, I provide my students with the opportunity to not only look at Google Sheets, but also Excel as well. So it gives them that opportunity to whatever they feel most comfortable in to go from there. And that's why I guess I do try to put my hands in both baskets and learn both so I can provide the opportunity to learn different tools.
Yeah, right. So then, I mean, that becomes even more complicated, right? So we've got Google, you've got Microsoft, and then you've got like all these other amazing tools and, you know, third-party apps and platforms that you see around about, and you're getting all this inspiration. Do you ever worry that sometimes we have, like, we're so overwhelmed with choice that we're not even using the fundamentals yet? So it's one of the things I wrestle with is, like, sometimes we don't even use a Google Doc to its full capacity, but yet we're so distracted by all these new shiny toys. Like, how do you find yourself in that continuum of wanting to find inspiration and new ideas, but also let's get the most out of what we're already got?
100%. And I guess, yeah, that's my role in a nutshell, right, is being able to, guess, put my blinkers on. For those people who don't know what blinkers are, just focus on one train of thought and making sure that as a teacher, I'm adhering to the study design or the curriculum that we're teaching on, and then saying, all right, how can I link those different tools in there without blowing it all up and going, oh my goodness, I'm so far behind because I've tried this, and this, and rather than saying, right, give me one tool and go from there. When I say that, in my coaching role, I do say to my, because we've got a number of different KLA heads at our school, and one of the things I say to them is, let's have a discussion around one tool that you think might work in your team, and that might be each term or each semester. Let them have a play with it. Let them put that into their classroom and then come back to me and say, right, yeah, that really worked, or no, it didn't hit the mark. And then that's feedback for me to go out and do some more research, go out and look for more tools that might suit that team.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So I guess, yeah, that's where I'm at.
Yeah. And in terms of that coaching role, do you have like a coaching program that you run? Like, is there a method of coaching, like the Grow coaching model or, you know, professional learning cycles or anything? Do you have a particular model that you use with staff?
Sure. So from a coaching point of view, we use the growth coaching model.
Mm-hmm.
But from a team-based approach, we use collaborative teaching teams,
mm-hmm,
where each KLA have their own teams, and we have leaders who kind of sit above them that kind of help us work towards our common goals, which are your school annual achievement process and school improvement plan and things like that.
Yeah.
But from a growth coaching mindset, again, it's being able to listen and then adapt and then give them the confidence to go out and try something new and then come back, rather than you just stepping in and doing it for them.
Yeah.
Saying that, though, there are times when it matters urgent, and it's got to be done straight away, and that's where I come in and help as well.
Right. And so what does that help look like? So is an emergency, like, is it like take over and demonstrate a tool, or is it?
It's a little bit of both. More often than not, it's more IT support. So go in and my computer's not working, or I can't connect to the projector, or we use Vivi as our tool of choice in terms of projecting. So occasionally it's just I can't get something to work, and I'll just go in and troubleshoot. Mm-hmm. In terms of tech tools, I guess it's more around occasionally I'll go in and work with students in small groups, or I'll work with the teacher and sit in the back of the room just to provide some feedback on how they're using a tool. Again, it constantly changes, and it all depends on the specific need of a teacher or a team.
Mm. Yeah, so it sounds like you're doing a bit of that IT support side of things, as well as the pedagogy, teaching and learning side of things as well.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then so in terms of that, in terms of like a change, I'm just really interested in that you've got all these options, you're learning a lot, And then you're passing that through to different teachers and saying, hey, try this, let's see if that works and not. How do you manage almost that overwhelm of change, like the almost the change fatigue and the here's a new idea and here's a new idea and then and so on? Like, how do you personally manage that?
I'll come back to personally for a second. I just had a thought when you were asking that question. Only recently, probably in the last year or so, I've started to send out what was a weekly email. Then it pushed out to a fortnightly. Then it pushed out to a monthly. Mm-hmm. And the feedback I kept getting was, we love what you're sending out. It's just around tech tools and how we can use them in the classroom. But it's just too much. Just ease back on it. And I've gone, okay, I'm going, well, I'm not really sending that much. But the feedback was, it's just too much. All right, so now I'm sending it once a term.
Yeah.
And then the feedback I got just last week was, we love them. Can you send more? Right. So, again, it's all to do with the current situation staff are facing with in Melbourne. We're starting to go, we are face-to-face again.
Yeah.
So people are starting to get whatever normal is.
Yeah.
And they're feeling comfortable in the classroom, so they're trying to do more things.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the last 2 years being remote, that was a little bit too much. So, again, it's for me, it's receiving feedback and then taking that on without being personal. It's all about sustainable growth. Yeah. Personally, you asked, sorry, the question was?
Yeah, how do you manage change. That whole, change fatigue? Because I see you're involved in a lot of things. You seem to be the kind of person who's just like, oh, there's an opportunity, I'll put my hand up, I'll get involved in that. Even little things, like I'm just remembering when I think it was Brett Salakis who started off The Walking Ed, where people would do a walk during lockdown and put a podcast on and then talk about what they're listening. There's like, you're one of the first people. And I was like, well, there he is again. Like he's dove into that one as well. So,
And look, for me, I'll be honest, you change is, it can be overwhelming, don't get me wrong, but I use, like, for example, Walking Ed was a way for me to, because we're at times during hard lockdown, we're only allowed to walk from our house for within 1 hour a day for within a 5K radius. So for me, that was getting the kids out of the house and getting some sort of fresh air. So being able to do that while listening to a podcast and playing with the kids, that was, for me, a way to, I guess, relax and just focus on my mental health in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of jumping in, again, it's just a way for me to step away from teaching and just and actually, I guess, reevaluate things.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, I think you get that headspace to when you're out and you're walking, you're listening and you're reflecting and.
Yeah.
Yeah, it works. I think that mental well-being is very important around that. And it's interesting because in those times, different communities started popping up in a sense of like global connections in a sense. And people found like that connection through community, even though it wasn't like we're not meeting face-to-face as such. But it seemed to take on a bit of a different meaning in that way.
No, definitely. Look, for me, the PL, the online PLN, as I mentioned earlier, has just been an amazing opportunity for me to learn and, I guess, connect with. Obviously, speaking with Brett many times over the years, and it's always had that mutual respect.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope the same with you, Mike. Obviously, we've known each other for a number of years, just occasionally face-to-face, but more often not online. And any time I can to support what you're doing, I'm more than willing to do that. And I guess in the end, it is that chance to step away and just have downtime. Mm. Obviously, being a father of six, it's constantly on the go.
Yeah.
In a normal world, we've got, it's literally every night of the week, we've got kid activities. And so for me, listening to podcasts, sharing things on Twitter and discussing with other educators is a way for me just to have that time just to step away and so that's why you may see me tweet quite a bit. It's a way for me to remind myself of the things I've learned while I'm listening to a podcast.
Yeah, that's a great idea. So you're just doing these little micro lessons along the way And that's as much for you as it is for anybody else by the sounds of things.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And then how many of your staff do you think are following you on Twitter? And because like we did a podcast in the last episode around presentations, and one of the hardest groups of people to lead are the groups that you have to serve. So the group of teachers that are in front of you day in and day out, they, you know, bring in an outsider, they'll think they're amazing because they're an outsider. But when you have to talk to them, it's very, very hard. So do you find many are following you along on that journey and picking up little bits and pieces where you go, or is it more about more of that wider audience for you?
I would hope that my staff follow, but mm-hmm. I don't honestly believe it. Mm-hmm. It is for me a wider audience and being able to be connected to as many like-minded educators as I can. I did present to our staff a number of years ago on the power of PLN.
Mm-hmm.
And I got probably half a dozen people straight away as I'm talking, signing up to Twitter and following me. And that was pretty much about it. Yes. So I guess coming back to what you mentioned around presentation, it was awesome that I've been able to connect, but it's, I guess, that follow-up and being able to support moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what about you personally? Like, where do you go for your inspiration? It sounds like you use Twitter a lot, but is that your single source of truth, so to speak? Is that the only platform you're on, or are you sort of a little bit wider than that?
Look, I've tried to get onto as many platforms as possible just because it gives me a range of different learning options. So I am on LinkedIn, as you mentioned earlier. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram, but with Instagram it's a little bit of personal but also professional, so I don't use that a lot for my I learn from it, but I don't post a lot professionally on my Insta page.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very much a wide-ranging area in terms of learning, but from a passionate point of view, I love all sports.
Nice.
So for me, it's watching, it's playing when I can, and that gives me that passion. Because I've got 3 degrees in sport management, so before I was a teacher, that was my goal, was to get into some sort of sports administration.
Wow.
And I did those degrees either side of the 2000 Sydney Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the big thing. Let's get everyone into sports administration, and then all the funding was there, and then the Olympics happened, and then goodbye funding.
Yeah.
So again, it I think it's given me that the platform to then take off with teaching. So don't get me wrong, at the moment it's just their 3 pieces of paper I've got up on my wall, but it's more than that. It's given me that foundation to use that experience to share with not only colleagues but also my students as well.
Mm.
And I think I've had many conversations over the years with students who may be struggling with connecting with school, and their passion is sports. So I've been able to have that conversation and say, right, what is it about sport that we can link back to school?
Mm.
So whether it's reading, so I've provided students with sport books that I've got here at home, and then given them that impetus to go out and read and have that conversation. Or students who are in the process of looking at university courses. So I have a discussion around that. I was in Australian Army Reserves for a little bit. So students who are going down that path can have a conversation.
Right.
So for me, it's using those life experiences to provide that opportunity to build rapport and relationships.
Yeah, right. So if you had to choose one platform to give you some inspiration, which platform would you go to?
I'd say Twitter. It's been my go-to for a number of years. Look, don't get me wrong, I love LinkedIn because it's a more professional outlier. But for me, it's Twitter. So.
Right. And if you had to bury into Twitter in particular, is there a particular groups of people or hashtags you follow? Like what's your process?
Look, I am a team leader of Aussie Ed, so I can't not shout them out. So hashtag Aussie Ed. We run every Sunday night, Melbourne time, 8:30 p.m.
Yep.
But, yeah, so Aussie Ed, I look at lots. So obviously Hashtag outclass, can't forget that one.
Yeah.
But TLAP, so teach the Pirates, so Dave Burgess, I follow Matt Miller, Ditch Book.
Yeah.
It all depends on where I'm at and what time I've got to follow.
Yeah.
Occasionally I'll miss some. There was one chat that I was following recently that's just finished up. It was Core Chat by the Core Collaborative over in the US. And more often than not, it was around 10:30 in the morning our time on a Wednesday morning. And more often than not, I was teaching, but I was able to go back over and have a look at the questions and answer where I could. But it was a really good eye-opener for me because it wasn't just tech-based, which I do enjoy, but it was more around the pedagogy of learning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I'm starting to get more and more into so I can, I guess, connect both the technology side of things and knowing how my students learn, but also how I learn and being able to share that with colleagues as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you've probably picked up on something there, and it's maybe not immediately obvious to you because it's just what you do. But I think there's a lot of people that might use Twitter or some social platform, and they lurk there and they're just absorbing, but they're not necessarily giving back. And you said just there in your answer, like you'd go back, read the questions, even though you're out of sync in terms of that live chat happening, but then you'd answer where you could. And I think it's in that reciprocal nature of social media, right, where we're social beings, that we should be giving as well as receiving and answering into that, because that's when you sort of get that buy-in, right, from those sorts of engagements.
100%. And I think for me, I've gotten so much out of following different people along the years that being able to share back as my experience grows is a really key feature for me. Another area that I'd like to help with is obviously with pre-service teachers and new teachers coming into the profession, being able to help them. And it's not just pointing them to Twitter and saying, that's the almighty type of thing, but yeah, being able to give them some context as to why I use it and then saying, well, give it a go, and then and helping them navigate through their first couple of years of being a teacher. And I think that's a really key area, is being able to not only receive information, but also give it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so in terms of managing like that Twitter feed, do you use a particular tool to segregate all the different chats and the feed, or are you one of these guys who just jumps in and works your way through?
Again, depending on the situation, if I've got enough time to sit down and set up my platform, my computer, I'll set up TweetDeck and have all the different hashtags open. But more often than not, it's just I've got Twitter pinned to the top of my Chrome bar and open it up, see what's there, type in a hashtag, and away I go.
Okay.
So again, it might sound disorganized or all over the place, but that's how I work. So
yeah,
again, it's all about the day and the time and when I can get on.
Yeah. And have you taken the time to set up lists in Twitter and things like that as well? Or
no, I haven't. And that's I know I get added to lists. And yeah, it's like awesome.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Oh, it's I guess it's something that I've always thought, okay, I might look into it. But I just, yeah, again, I haven't had the time to sit down and go, okay, how does the list work, and then go from there.
Yeah.
I know with Aussie Ed, we're this month focusing on giving Twitter Spaces a go in terms of the audio feature and having a conversation rather than just the typing out of answers. And I guess it's an area that's new to me, so I'm still learning. Look, feedback so far, it's been a good change for Aussie Ed, and I'm always open to new ideas. So
yeah, that's awesome. That's cool. And then so I guess bringing this all back in terms of that inspiration and connection piece, like what are you seeing recently that you've thought, wow, that's a damn good idea, or there's a bit of inspiration, I want to try that out?
Yeah.
What's caught your mind or caught your eye recently?
Look, for me, it's Flipgrid. It's something that I've been wanting to really dive into with my classes, because for me, I know my kids love getting their phone out and taking selfies and sending clips and all this sort of stuff, but when it comes to classroom and then the experience over the last 2 years about and running Zoom, I couldn't get anyone to turn the camera on. So being able to use Flipgrid in a meaningful way in the classroom not only gives them that opportunity to use their phones in a meaningful way, but also what I've found as well is I have a number of students who may not feel comfortable putting their hand up in class and answering questions in front of others. And using Flipgrid, to me, gives them that opportunity.
Yeah.
So that's one piece of tech that I can see being useful in my classes. Look, for me, you being a Google school and using Google Workspace, there are heaps of different ideas that I want to do. But again, it comes down to the time, but also whether it can be meaningfully used in my classes.
Yeah. Is there any tool or tip that you've seen and you thought, man, that's going to be amazing, you've tried it and it's just been an absolute flop or a failure?
I'm just trying to think of one. Google Sheets is a key one, because with my VCE class, my year 11, 12 class, we do a lot of data analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And there is one feature in there that I'd love to continue trying. It's around removing duplicates.
Oh, yeah.
Being able to analyze the data and say, right, there's heaps of gaps here. I want to be able to remove that and then go from there. Another tool that I really enjoy using, and I got onto it last year through Eleni Karitsis, who's a mutual friend of ours, is Moat.
Yep.
And I love the idea of providing audio feedback on top of being able to provide text feedback. I found that providing that voice, especially during remote learning, where it was just a face and it was a typing feedback, having that ability to hear students but also hear teachers speak was key. So, yeah, using Moat in all my, whether it's docs, sheets, forms even, provides that opportunity to give that relevant feedback. It's also personal, and I think it's a really key area in classroom management is being able to provide that ongoing verbal feedback.
Yeah, definitely. I think anything that can bring in that audio into that, it just makes it much more relatable, I think. You can, the students can hear the tone in your voice. Hopefully they can hear a little bit behind, not just the comment that's written and can be interpreted the wrong way. And you're right, that any of that AI in Sheets at the moment is just amazing, where you can get Google Sheets to have a look at your data and do data cleanup suggestions for you. And that always gets a big response when we're doing business training.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, funnily enough, I actually just thought of it as you spoke about AI in Sheets. I've been trying to teach my students how to use formulas and functions, so the basic stuff within spreadsheets, but being able to type a formula in and then Google Sheets pops up saying, do you want to do the rest? Well, yeah, sure, why not? So it again, it's focusing on efficiency and effectiveness, and that's one of the things I want to share with my students, is being able to maximize the tool and not have to spend lots of time on doing it.
Yeah.
So that was a eye-opener for me. It's like, brilliant, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And the kids go, why is it awesome? It's like, well, do you want to spend 5 minutes of doing something or do you want to spend 2 seconds? So, I can see how the business world can see that as a really beneficial tool as well.
Yeah, or even that natural language in the Explore tool inside Google Sheets, where you can just ask normal questions of complex data, and then when it gives you the formula at the end, and it's this formula that would take up 10 cells to write if you're going to type it out, and probably 20 minutes of thinking it through.
Yeah.
And you just be able to ask like natural language queries. It's amazing where this sort of thing's starting to head. And I think because the students, they just grow up in this world, right? It doesn't even occur to them that 15 years ago, that would have taken me half an hour to actually type that formula out. And you'd have to be an absolute ninja to even know what to type. It's pretty outstanding these days. And I think they just take it for a little bit of granted. It's just like, oh, yeah, just push a button and it works, right?
Yeah, so. Yeah, they expect everything to be like that because that's what they're used to with having a phone or having a tablet or anything like that. So being able to show them the power of Sheets or any other tech tool, and then them having that aha moment is, to me, that's what it is being a teacher.
Yeah, and I think from a teacher point of view, showing them teachers little tips like that in terms of them being able to track student progress, or all of a sudden that's got some value beyond, I'm using technology and I'm doing an engaging lesson, it's great, and I'm getting to the outcome, which I would have got to anyway if I hadn't have used a tool. So if we can find tools that will reduce the amount of time it takes to do the administration task, or hopefully even maybe reduce some behavior management issues because the students are a little bit more engaged, or if we can show them the value of that, then teachers start to go, okay, what else can we do with this? And you start to get that snowball effect.
Yeah, and for me, coming back to what we were talking about being a coach, is me being able to provide the skills to staff, and then that, those staff being sharing with others, and then coming back to me, and I've gone, so it's just that flow-on effect. I think that's for me the beneficial part of being a coach, is seeing those staff members who may be someone who may have been, I guess, not a negative mindset, but struggle with seeing the benefit of it, and then having that opportunity to say, I now use this all the time, and it's fantastic. That's what it is for me.
That's awesome. Well, it's been really good chatting to you and hearing a little bit about what you do, the role you take, and where you get that inspiration and connection and community from. And it's I think one of the biggest takeaways for me is just being reminded that the engagement is where it's at. It's not just sitting there and soaking it up, but it's answering questions where you can, it's sharing ideas and resources that others might be able to pick something up and kind of work with it. Cam, if people want to connect with you, where's the best way for them to get connected?
Yep, it's on Twitter. Twitter handle is @CameronRoss3. As I said earlier, I am part of the Aussie Ed group, so just reach out on #AussieEd. And I'm always willing to share and collaborate and connect. In the end, baseline is being able to listen and hear some troubles or issues that you might be having, then trying to help. And if I don't help, I'll put a question out there to PLN and let's collaborate. So @CameronRoss3 is my Twitter handle.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll definitely go give Cameron a follow and turn on notifications even, so that every time he tweets, you get notified and you're not missing any of the action. And check out some of those hashtags and a few of the accounts that Cameron mentioned during the session today, and see what you can do in terms of your own professional development. See if you can start to learn a little bit wider, and definitely makes a difference where you can find those places of inspiration and connection. And that just really postures you for that long haul, the long race. And again, I really appreciate the way you show up on socials, Cameron, the way you're always diving in, giving something a go, willing to answer. So it's been great to have you on the call.
Well, thanks, Mike. And thanks again for inviting me on. It's been a blast.
Excellent. All right. We'll talk to you soon, mate.
Thanks for listening. For more episodes and show notes, visit utb.fyi/outclassed.